now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
All right. Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, helping you find your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, helping you find the courage to be able to reclaim who you have always been and who you are as that living, eternal soul. Well, I just want to welcome everybody here this evening and just remind everybody that every one of these broadcasts always will focus on the integration of our spirituality and our mental health. But in order to make practical applications of that integration, you know, we have to place it within the context of our relationships that we have with ourselves and God and others or the divine. So all in all, just want to wish everybody an early Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah for those who are celebrating Hanukkah, and an early Kwanzaa for those who will be celebrating Kwanzaa. It is certainly an exciting time with lots going on in the world, but as I'll be sharing throughout this message tonight, with all the chaos and everything that's going on, don't miss the joy. Don't miss the joy of this season. I am Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or if you just want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I just invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And the other website that I also use is www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. So either one will allow me to read your comments. And if you would like to call in and be part of the show, I always invite listeners to call in. You could call in with any insights or questions or general conversations on tonight's topic. Don't miss the joy, Charlie Brown. So if you want to call in and have any thoughts about don't miss the joy, Charlie Brown, you can call that toll-free number. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after the break. Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, it's all good, because this particular broadcast will be posted on the BBS Radio website so that you can go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. And these podcasts are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, Spotify, and Amazon Music, as well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM HD3 out of New York on the weekends. So, like I said, just want to give a quick shout out to everybody who is celebrating during the month of December. It could be birthdays, it could be Kwanzaa, it could be Hanukkah, and certainly Christmas. And so, just wanted to welcome everybody to the show, especially those who are tuning in, for the very first time. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Well, as I usually start off with these broadcasts, so just kind of get everybody up to speed, just a general explanation of what Reclaiming Authenticity is all about before we get into our don't miss the joy there, Charlie Brown. It's just a very powerful message that I am reminded of, pretty near every day of what this the show is all about. Because it's made such a huge impact in my life. And when I really got a hold of this message, it really got a hold of me. And just never the same again, because I am quite convinced that it really doesn't matter who we are or where we're born or into what family we were placed, let's say. You know, ours is a world that's just full of relationships. I mean, nobody's an island. You know, I don't care what Simon and Garfunkel sang about, you know, that I'm a rock, I'm an island. We're not. We are social beings who often spend our lives trying to make sense out of our world by trying to find our place in the world. But, you know, as social beings, it's often within the context of these relationships that we unfortunately experience a tremendous amount of pain and suffering. And these could be any experiences from overt acts of betrayal or cruelty that somebody has inflicted against us, or maybe we've inflicted those acts of betrayal and cruelty, to others. You know, there are times when we are just simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Whatever or however we bear those scars of the physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual woundedness, healing can occur. Because, and here's the irony, that just as we experience our, say, woundedness in and through relationships, it's also within the context of healthy relationships that we can find our healing, we can find our voice, and we can learn to live authentically. Well, the difficulty then is often finding the courage to discover that which has always been in you. You know, those gifts, those graces, those skills, your uniqueness that we have come into the world with. You know, it's something I share every one of these broadcasts, that my favorite Latin word is hacetas. It's a thisness. It's something that the Scottish Franciscan John Duns Scotus coined as, you know, this is your uniqueness. Or as I explain it to kids, it's like, that's your thumbprint. You know, that's what makes you you. But it's so much more than you can see in your thumbprint. But you have plenty of gifts and skills and graces and your personalities and so forth. This uniqueness that you have brought into the world and that other people certainly benefit from. Because I am of the firm belief that we, everybody, and I'm say everybody, comes into this world with everything we already need for ourselves and others. But there are times that we go through various experiences and, you know, for one reason or another, we've given away parts of ourselves, if not the whole of ourselves, and that uniqueness or that thisness. And maybe we've done this because we didn't feel as though we lived up to another person's expectation of us. Or maybe we hid our uniqueness, that specialness about us from others in order to survive abuse. Or perhaps those aspects of ourselves had been taken away from us and we didn't have the strength to fight it. Okay, and there's no shame and guilt in this. It's what do we do once we know what has happened to us? Because when we become aware that we have done these things or these things have happened to us, it does take tremendous courage to reclaim who we are. And we can reclaim our voice, uniqueness, and our thisness. Franklin Delano Roosevelt once said that courage is not the absence of fear, but rather courage is the assessment that something else is more important than fear. And everybody has courage. It's just, where is yours? Where does it show up in your life? How do you show up for yourself? How do you show up for others? And so forth. So just in case you're wondering what reclaiming authenticity is all about, it really does focus on this integration of spirituality and our mental health, all within these contexts. Okay? And, speaking of relationships, let's just say, and where do we find our woundedness and where do we find our healing? And, you know, it could be a little unsettling for people to realize that, you know, these relationships just might be within our own families or amongst coworkers or even amongst our friends. But, you know, whenever we transform, whenever we heal and that transformation is really taking traction in our lives, we also start to transform others through our presence, through our grace, through our understanding. You know, we just might be a little bit more patient with ourselves and just a little bit more patient with others. We just might have that further understanding of not only ourselves, but also of other people around us. But you know, first and foremost, that forgiveness, kindness, and compassion begin with how we treat ourselves. Because when we are compassionate with ourselves, and when we learn to be compassionate with ourselves, we then can be even more compassionate with others. And whenever we learn that we can be forgiving of ourselves, we can certainly be more forgiving of others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this opens our hearts to be able to see and live in gratitude with others. So all in all, this transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. Well, in the past couple of weeks, I've noticed how many people have how they've been overly stressed out for this particular, let's say, Christmas season. You know, from running around, trying to find that perfect present to place under the tree, to finding the right tree, to coordinating meal preparations and travel schedules. People's stress and anxiety levels appear to be just at an all-time high compared to previous years. In fact, it seems as though somewhere in my conversations with others, I find myself wanting to say, that sounds like a lot of planning for a great time. It sounds like it's just going to be wonderful. But please don't miss the joy and the gratitude of the season. And that doesn't come out of my hat, okay? Because one of my all-time favorite Christmas movies is, or Christmas show, let's just say, is A Charlie Brown Christmas. Now, it is a classic ever since it aired way back in 1965. Yes, that's right. It is 60 years old, and it comes out year after year after year, and people love it. And it has a simple message of a boy who is just searching for the real meaning of Christmas. And it reminds all of us that living in joy and peace and gratitude isn't just for one day. But when we live from our souls, we experience these things every day. In fact, there is a depth to each of these aspects once we place them in the context of relationships. Because how we are with others is often how we are with ourselves, and so on and so forth. And how we see others is often how we see ourselves. And unresolved or unhealed wounds really distort how we view and interact with the world. Well, I don't know if there's any fans out there of Heinz Kohut. He was the author of Self-Psychology. Well, in his early, like I think it was like 1971, he had a book that he had published of his life's work, and it was just The Analysis of the Self. And Kohut, he defines the self as a person's psychological being, which consists of sensations, feelings, thoughts, and attitudes towards yourself and the world. Now, according to his model of self-psychology, Kohut understood our ability to overcome many issues in our lives as simply stemming from an underdeveloped sense of who we are. In other words, we don't really know who we are. You know, it's not only that we're simply not aware of that fact, but also we're not aware of what our inner gifts and beauties and strengths. What are those things that we really possess? What are those things that we brought into the world? Well, Kohut goes on to say that unfortunately, external objects in our lives have been substituted for what we really desire in relationships. That is love, acceptance, peace, intimacy, nurturing, courage, so on and so forth. We crave these things, but for one reason or another, we don't find them in relationships, human relationships, that is. So we develop relationship to external objects in order to satisfy our desire for, let's say, love and acceptance, peace and intimacy, and so forth. Okay, so again, we come into this world with the potential to remember who we are as a soul, as well as the ability to cultivate these life-giving characteristics. So here's just a quick example. You know, in order to develop a healthy sense of self, you know, we are required to internalize the qualities of external objects in our lives. I mean, it may seem backward, but follow me on this. Okay, so let's just say, you know, further on, let's say you grew up with a favorite stuffed animal or a toy. And through that favorite stuffed animal or toy, you learn the value of being comforted. You learn how to play with the animal. You know, you had a lot of fun, some companionship, so on and so forth, that the toy or the animal provided. Okay, now the reason such external objects connect with us is that at a very young age, they meet an inner emotional and psychological need. Okay, otherwise, if they didn't, who would play with a stuffed animal? Okay, but although this is normal behavior in childhood, as we mature, we then internalize these qualities of, let's say, our, you know, inner emotional and psychological needs. We internalize these qualities, and now we substitute the stuffed animal or toy for more meaningful, emotional, physical, even sexual intimacy in relationship with others. Okay? These are human relationships. We learn how to grow. We learn how to love. We learn how to trust. We learn how to be vulnerable. And we learn how to hold the vulnerability of others. And if we're unable to do these things, we are going to be able to, I should say, we will struggle to reciprocate these human qualities in a very meaningful, life-giving way. Now, a more contemporary example of this struggle that people face in moving from an underdeveloped sense of self toward a healthy sense of self actually comes from the movie Ted. Okay, this was a movie, it's been a while since it's been out, but in 2012, okay, the movie Ted. In this film, John Bennett was the main character. He's a 35-year-old man-child, and he received his childhood wish of making his teddy bear, Ted, come to life. Now, growing up, Ted served as a great companion, a confidant, and unconditional love for little Johnny. Unfortunately, John never internalized these qualities that he received from Ted, that is the object, and as a result, he struggled to find meaning in his relationships, namely with his girlfriend Lori, without Ted always being around. And that was the, you know, point of the movie. Like, she would always complain, it's like, can't we just be alone? Why does Ted always have to be here? Well, you know, you uncover some things and you realize that, you know, John Bennett didn't really know how to be himself without Ted. He didn't make that shift. He wasn't able to internalize the love that he felt for Ted into other human relationships. And, you know, many people also look at external objects in order to satisfy these inner stirrings of the soul. And whether or not these objects, you know, provide pleasure, happiness, comfort, security, or peace, they can never touch the cry of our soul consciousness that connects with God. And these objects, when you get right down to it, are just simply poor substitutes that on one level serve to meet an emotional and or physical need, or even maybe a mental need. However, the reason why we cling to external objects is that on one level, they work. You know, let's just take alcohol as an example. You know, alcohol is a depressant, okay? And it calms emotional anxiety and stress. On the other hand, cocaine is a stimulant, and it boosts mental and physical energy. And now, even sexual orgasms release dopamine in the brain, and provide a physiological sense of elation. And a lengthy workout releases endorphins and provides us with an analgesic feeling. And yet, the only neurotransmitter that enhances, trust in relationships and enhances relationships themselves is oxytocin. You know, and we don't get oxytocin, or we don't get the effects of oxytocin by, drinking or doing drugs. The oxytocin, that's the one that really creates a bond or an attachment with others. And oxytocin was first understood, this is the neurotransmitter that's released when a mother holds her newborn for the first time. And when we cultivate loving relationships through appropriate touch, like hugging and kissing, and definitely lovemaking. And it is kind of ironic that these objects people use in their lives have the potential to destroy lives. Okay, like alcoholism or drug addiction, gambling addiction, eating addiction, sexual addiction, so on and so on and so on, all release dopamine because of the manipulation of these pleasure sensors, dopamine and serotonin. And again, this is how we're hardwired, okay? But through this addictive type behaviors and through these external objects, we know how to manipulate how we're hardwired. What does a person do if they feel really bad about themselves? They might turn to drugs or alcohol, which temporarily takes the edge off, but it does nothing to go right to the core of why a person is drinking or why they're doing drugs. I've always argued, a lot of times in this profession, I've always had to sit through seminars and especially seminars on opiates. And being out here close to Philadelphia, the 95 interstate corridor that runs through New York City and on up the East Coast and runs down through Philadelphia and down through, goes all the way through to what am I thinking of here, folks? Florida. There we go. That is a major corridor to run drugs. And one of the major drugs that are out there now are opiates. And so, again, I have to sit through these, not have to, said that poorly. I sit through these seminars and I listen to a panel of experts talk about the facts, the figures, the numbers of people who have died, the number of people of, who just struggle and how it affects society. It really takes a huge chunk out of the socioeconomic underbelly of, the nation and people's lives. Okay. However, what I don't hear, and the question that I constantly raise with the expert panel is, what is it that people don't want to feel? What is the pain? Is the pain physical? Is the pain emotional? Is it mental? Is it even spiritual? What is the pain that people don't want to feel that an opioid is really taking their minds off of that, by releasing dopamine? They would rather feel the dopamine. Of course, who wouldn't? That's what dopamine is for. But what is it that they don't want to feel that keeps them using opiates? But, on the other hand, if we truly want to understand ourselves as a soul, we must learn that these external objects have the potential. They have the potential. They don't always do it, but they have the potential to point us to connect with a higher consciousness that transcends our emotional, psychological, physical, and even spiritual woundedness. In fact, as we listen to the cry of our soul, we realize that our deep desire is to connect and reconnect to the pure sense of who we are. In other words, remember who you really are. In fact, this cry of the soul is so powerful, so deafening at times, that once we fully embrace ourselves, we will never be satisfied with anything less. It is that strong. Well, years ago, in one of the mental health offices where I worked, hung this framed quote from the family therapist, Virginia Satir. Now, Virginia Satir, she was ahead of her time, but she also grew up in the early 1900s, and I think she passed in 1988. But anyway, she grew up in, let's say, a male-dominated psychiatrist world, you know, psychiatry world. And she really held her ground because, again, she started to place mental health and emotional concerns in with everyday relationships. And this frame quote of hers is something that I would pass by every day. And here's the quote: "I want to love you without clutching. I want to appreciate you without judging. I want to join you without invading. I want to invite you without demanding. I want to leave you without guilt. I want to critique you without blaming. And I want to help you without insulting. And if I can have the same from you, then we can truly meet each other." Well, as I said, day after day, I pass by this quote, but I really never stop to read it, you know, just let alone understand its impact on relationships, both within and outside of the counseling relationship. So one day, eating my lunch, I read and reread that quote slowly. I let it sink in. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, powerful saying, but far too demanding. Too many conditions, too many changes are required of people to reach this. In fact, as I assumed, it's so unrealistic to place this kind of pressure on another person and expect them to keep up their part of the bargain. Well, little did I realize that I was distorting true relationships for transactional ones. You know, the ones that, well, if you could do this for me, then I could do that for you. Yeah. How many of us have said that one? Okay. We place conditions on relationships all the time. And sometimes society places conditions on us that if you are, or if you want to be a valued consumer, well, then you have to buy this. And if you really want to be the one who has it all together, well, then you have to do that. All conditions, and it's very subtle at times, and we get caught up into it, and yet it really tears relationships apart because relationships are not meant to be conditional. We're meant to meet each other where we are and have that realness, that authenticity, that genuineness in relationships. And when we have that, then it becomes very, very meaningful. Well, in various counseling and even pastoral settings, I've witnessed too many people, including myself, making excuses for not wanting to be in authentic relationships. I mean, how many of these can you identify with? Well, I've been hurt, and I'm never going to open my heart up to anyone ever again. Fool me once, and shame on you, but you fool me twice, well, that's a shame on me. Well, she hurt my feelings, or you broke my heart. You let me down again. And God, you didn't answer my prayers the way I wanted you to answer them, you know, and so on and so on and so on. And yet the more I sat with that poem, you know, that saying from Satir, her words pursued me like a shadow. Little did I realize that I was reading her goals for her own life. You know, like I said, she was born in 1916, and she was certainly ahead of her time. But instead of viewing humanity's problems as stemming from the popular belief back in the day of calling everything neurosis, she believed that problems were the result of how people were unprepared to cope with life's challenges because they dealt with every situation and relationship in life from a place of woundedness. instead of from a place of healing and authenticity. And Satir believed that all people are equipped with the capacity for growth and transformation. And as a result, she not only dedicated her life to helping people find their true inner selves, but also empowered them to live more congruent, genuine lives. So, in case you're wondering, that's where I got a set of my beliefs. This is why I do the work that I do, because I see the potential in everybody to discover who they are. You know, she saw that potential for people to be able to see themselves as they ought to be seen. You know, heal from the psychological, emotional, physical, and even spiritual wounds. Okay. Well, I really want to hear what's on your heart about this subject. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I am pleased to be your host, Dr. James Hauck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, just want to give a quick shout out to everybody who is celebrating something during the month of December, whether it be anniversaries or birthdays. If you celebrate Kwanzaa, happy Kwanzaa to everybody. If you celebrate Hanukkah, happy Hanukkah, and a Merry Christmas to one and all. It's just hard to believe all these celebrations and just how fast the month of December, let alone 2025 has been. It's just a blink, and here we are, December, almost going into January. Well, earlier in the show, I was talking about how if we truly want to understand ourselves as a soul, we must learn that the external objects in our lives have the potential to point us to connect with a higher consciousness that really transcends our psychological, emotional, and physical realms. In fact, as we listen to the cry of our soul, we realize that our deepest desire is to remember, is to connect or reconnect to the purest sense of who we are. And in fact, this cry of the soul is so powerful, so deafening, that once we fully embrace ourselves, we will never be satisfied with anything less. I mean, and why would we? When we realize that we are light, that we are soul. The question then becomes, how then do I live that out? You know, how do I put that into, let's say, motion on a Monday afternoon or a Wednesday night or a Saturday morning? Or something. How do I live that out? What does that look like? How does it impact my relationships and so on and so forth? Now, admittedly, looking to others for approval and self-worth appears to be a natural part of developing a sense of who we are. And here we go. We're coming back to Heinz Kohut and self-psychology. In fact, this behavior is often how we first learn about ourselves and others and the world. I mean, it's simply called mirroring. We just watch how other people interact with us. If we say, you know, not say, but if we giggle a certain way and we act kind of goofy and you know, parents, caregivers, you know, loved ones, whoever, are laughing with us. And they're like, hey, that's a good feeling. I want to keep that up. But if we sense that if we do something and we get the frown or we get the look of disapproval or we get yelled at or whatever, and we learn real quickly, like, okay, I did something wrong. I'm not sure what I did, but I don't want to feel that look anymore. Okay. So again, families, teachers, and other early childhood authority figures are certainly, as they're mirroring back to us, they are reflecting their own views, you know, because what one might think is funny, somebody else may not, and so on and so forth. Okay. Now, long before we could form words, we are very skilled at reading these facial prompts or sensing another's approval or disapproval and recognizing tones of love and laughter, anger and contempt, distinguishing between a loving touch or a cold detachment, and learning every other emotion in between. Now, sometime around 3 months of age or so, we begin to engage in a face-to-face interaction with our caregivers, like a social referencing, as it were. Okay. And, you know, as infants, we display these visual, facial, and even vocal behaviors in response to how we're being treated. It's kind of like a give and take exchange between ourselves and others, you know, and it typically helps us to understand how we should behave or how we, you know, what should we say in different situations. And as a result, we hold these initial interactions in our physical bodies as we develop a sense of trust and safety or suspicion and distrust. I mean, from early stages of infancy, we learned to regulate our emotions as we took our social cues from people around us, how to express feelings appropriately, or when and where such emotions are to be displayed, whether people are at work or play or school or family celebrations, even funerals. And as we are, or I should say, as we physically and emotionally mature, we have to learn to become less dependent on others for this directional, let's say, directional affirmation and replace it with an internalized or an individual sense of who we are. So in other words, instead of looking externally to get what we need in terms of approval and and acceptance, we now look within to find those qualities, you know, such as resiliency, peace, self-love, and so forth. But how do we do this? I mean, really, what needs to be done? I mean, quite frankly, we all need to work through our own woundedness. You know, and that's just not being glib about the whole thing. It's like we have to work through our woundedness. This is what we have to do. And we have to be able to ask ourselves just a very sobering question: where have I been hurt the most? In fact, let's take that even deeper. Who has hurt us the most? Where do we struggle to find forgiveness for ourselves and in others? What do we find difficult to release in our lives because in some ways it serves a dysfunctional space in us? Because let's be quite honest, if we're not ready to forgive, we're going to hang on to that because it does serve a purpose, whatever that might be. You know, it just might feed that bitterness. But, you know, whenever we experience forgiveness and we are able to release the negative energy and the pain that we've been hanging on to, you know, those aspects of ourselves that no longer serve us, we tune into higher frequencies and higher vibrations, as it were, of spirituality. You know, think of it as a music tuner that's using a tuning fork by first striking the prongs and thereby releasing a perfect wave pattern, and then adjusting the sound of an instrument so that the two vibrations are in sync. I mean, that's a very powerful metaphor. It works in real life, and it has its application in, well, what happens when we forgive? Well, maybe our understanding of who we are is now coming more and more in line with who we are. But, you know, nevertheless, let us keep in mind that just as we initially look to others for our sense of affirmation and belonging and acceptance, so too are others looking to us to receive their sense of affirmation, belonging, and acceptance. And it goes both ways. And at first glance, this exchange to be mutually beneficial, let's just say. Okay. However, it can also lead to codependency in our relationships. Yeah, for example, codependency, all right? It's kind of a buzzword that's out there, you know, in relationships. But codependency basically is seen in an unhealthy relationship whereby one person supports or enables another person's addiction or poor mental health, immaturity, irresponsibility, insecurity, underachievement, to name a few. And that's just to name a few. Okay. Now, perhaps the most common theme in codependency is this excessive reliance on others for our approval and sense of identity. In other words, we don't know who we are apart from the other person telling us who they think we are, or behaving as if they know who we are and know what's best for us, and so forth. Okay. And for the most part, healing is also a matter of unlearning, let's say, these generational lessons that have been affected, you know, what family members have believed about themselves, as well as how these perceptions have affected their behaviors towards one another. Okay. You know, that also gets handed down, you know, of just how does my family perceive itself? How can it heal? Why doesn't it want to heal? Why does the family hang on to things? You know, even if one's parents or grandparents and grandparents are deceased, you know, healing can still be achieved by understanding the dynamics of trauma that has been handed down in the family, like I said, as well as appreciating the resiliency and other character strengths family members possess. You know, emotional and psychological wounds are not the only thing that we may have inherited. You know, our character strengths, our gifts and skills, they were also handed down as well. Who taught us about resiliency? Who modeled that for us? Who encouraged us in our life to really develop a sense of who we are and that understanding that what I have brought into the world is precious? But not to be used in a way in which we lord it over people and like, okay, now you're subservient to me. I'm superior to you. It's not that. But these gifts and giftedness and skills and graces and personalities and so on and so forth are meant to be shared. They're meant to be shared. They're not meant for us to keep in our back pocket and like, well, I'm not going to let anybody have that. Like, no, you came into the world with those things to share because that's how we nurture one another. We share our giftedness with others and they share their giftedness with us. Now, I once read a story, and this is going back years, but I once read a story in that certain African tribes, when someone did something wrong, okay, they take the person to the center of the village, the whole village, okay? They take the person to the center of the village where the tribe surrounds him, and for 2 days, they say nothing to him except all the good he has done and all the good of who he is. And they can do this because the tribe believes that each person is very good. But sometimes people make mistakes, which they understand as being a cry for help. So everyone in that community unites as a people to help him reconnect with his good nature. And this is what they call Ubuntu. Now imagine if we did that today. What would that look like, right? Instead of burdening somebody and ourselves with labels such as, well, you're just lazy, or you're just crazy, or you're just plain stupid. Instead of doing that, how about we remind the person of everything good they have done, including the fact that they need to be reminded of the need for them to go deeper in themselves and find the light that has always been there, but they don't know it yet. What's keeping them from being able to see themselves as that lighted soul? Now, I want you to sit with this next comment. Write it down, whatever. Sit with this. And this is life-changing. Because if we humans are capable of seeing and saying life-giving affirmations to one another, what would God say to us if God is there in the village, in the tribe, and we're in the middle? What would God say to us? Imagine what God would say for two whole days if God was part of that circle and we were in the center. If we humans are capable of seeing and saying life-giving affirmations, you know, to one another in everyday life, okay? Just imagine what God would say for 2 days if God was part of that circle and we were in the center. Sit with that one. And by the way, that's kind of a rest of your life, kind of sit and ponder that one, because it's that powerful. Now, true confession here, folks, on a Wednesday night, so close to Christmas. You know, I have to say that I often get annoyed at discussions around the opioid crisis, you know, what needs to be done to eradicate it. As I said, you know, a little while ago, you know, and all the discussions of how to solve this problem through better education or throwing more money at rehab programs or building bigger prisons. Again, nobody ever asks the question, what kind of pain are these people in that they don't want to feel? What's the physical pain they don't want to feel? What kind of emotional pain are they in? What kind of psychological pain are they in? And what kind of spiritual pain are they in? And yes, there is spiritual pain. So let's return to this African practice of Ubuntu. You know, Ubuntu is a Southern African philosophy deriving from the Nguni culture that roughly means, I am because we are. I am because we are. And it signifies the interconnection of all of humanity. I am because we are. And again, with becoming aware of this word Ubuntu, I also went on to read further that a South African student explains Ubuntu as seeing humanity in everybody. We are all one. Your fate is my fate. We are all siblings. Try to think of yourself not as an isolated individual, but as a drop in the ocean of humanity, a single entity. Ubuntu means kindness, humaneness, hospitality to everybody. Ubuntu means that we must lift all of us up collectively. And why do we see the concerns of the marginalized and the people who suffer and we think, well, at least I'm not one of them? Or maybe we see somebody of a different race or culture or class and think, well, that's their problem. What does that have to do with me? Well, why do we see ourselves as separate? According to Ubuntu, are they not our siblings? Are we not them? And they, not us? No, you're not lazy, crazy, and you're definitely not stupid. You are beautiful. You are loved. You have gifts, talents, skills, not, you know, to kill others, not to be filled with hatred or self-loathing. You're a soul. who has come from a vast universe filled with the presence of God, and you will return there. You're not lazy, crazy, or stupid, for this is not how God sees you. Never has, and never will. Maybe you just haven't realized that yet. See, we try to make ourselves worthy of God's grace and love, but we don't realize that unconditional love has always been with us. The only thing that separates us from God is our unawareness of God's unconditional love. And where there is unconditional love, there is also unconditional forgiveness and peace, just waiting to shower us with a love which we have never known or experienced. But to be quite honest, people, it's time for us to believe, trust, and walk in this truth, to see it in others, to see it in ourselves. When we forgive, let us do so from the perspective that the other person has yet to realize their fullness. And we need to forgive ourselves when we've forgotten our truth. And yes, the old saying, the truth does set us free. But freedom is often an intimidating aspect for us to grasp. Do we really want it? Do we know what that means? Do we know what we're saying to another person when we say, you're free, you are forgiven? Most of the time, we embrace negativity and love to be controlled by people who want us to be something that suits them, you know, and suits their unrealized truth. I've sat with many children who often struggle with low to no self-esteem, all because they've picked up on this message that they've heard from their parents and teachers or other authority figures in their lives, that they'll never amount to anything. Well, I leave you tonight with the words of Gandhi, that if you want real peace in the world, start with children. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Until the next time we are together in 2 weeks, everybody, please be safe out there, behave yourselves, and may you learn to walk as a blessed person that you are. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.